James is an amazing basketball player. I think he has the antics, he generates fouls, he does a lot of stuff that people dislike about the game, but they're still forgetting the fact that he's an amazing basketball player. He has a unique skill set and amazing ability to not only score for himself, but make players better around him. There's a lot that goes through your mind as you're driving. You're thinking score first, and then you're thinking if he steps up, do I throw the lob or do I throw the rotation pass? But then the hard part for a lot of righties is driving left and throwing left. As the saying goes, you put the reps in, you put the time in, it becomes extremely easy at one point or another. If you do something for 10,000 hours, you're for sure going to get good at it at some point. How good is just up to your skill level. When you know you've worked towards something, mentally you feel more comfortable doing it, the muscle memory is there, and you just have confidence. Welcome to the Mike Dicka episode of Pull Up. That's right, episode number 89. Happy holidays to everyone. Hope you're having a fantastic, fantastic holiday. Whether you believe in Christmas or not, I hope you're enjoying time with family. And I hope you're enjoying time with friends and looking forward to a beautiful and happy new year. Since it's Christmas, it's only right that we highlight Christmas games, Jordan. Who are you looking forward to watching most on this Christmas?
Oh, I'm into all of them. I'm a big Christmas Day consumer, but I'll go Lakers-Clippers. Because, well, the obvious reasons, excited to see LeBron and AD versus PG and Kawhi, excited to see which Laker fans, what star-studded Laker fans will be at Staples. That's always, like, entertainment in itself. And I really want to see, like, you know, are the Lakers as deep as we think? Because I've been really impressed with the fact that they've been able to roll out 8-9 guys every night. I thought going into the season that the Clippers would be the much deeper team. Obviously, we know that they have 9 guys playing about 20 minutes. And I've been just absolutely in awe of the fact that LeBron has been able to sustain this level on both ends of the floor, especially defensively, where we know that from a statistical standpoint, the last few years, he hasn't been as sound in the regular season. But seeing him at this level and then also seeing the Lakers at this level has been really cool. And then, you know, the fact that you have PG finally getting, his normal minutes is really exciting. So that would be the game
for me. No, I think you're right. I think the best game of the night to watch is definitely the Lakers-Clippers, more so because of the time, not just the teams that are playing, but you get up, you do the presents, you spend time with family, you eat, you sleep, you wake up again, and the next thing you know, it's 5 Pacific time, a.k.a. 8 Eastern time, and the game of the day is on. And you get to see LeBron James in his 14th consecutive Christmas game. You know he puts on a show on Christmas every year. You know he's got fire colorways he's going to play in. You know PG is going to have fire colorways he's playing in. You know Kawhi is going to be Kawhi, D'ing up, having fun, dunking without smiling, knocking down big shots. I think it's going to be a great game to watch. I think the other game that I'm looking forward to watching is the Bucks at Sixers. I think this Sixers team has a lot to prove. Obviously, Embiid has been dominant historically, not only against the Bucks, but against all NBA teams. And Charles Barkley and those guys have really talked to him about how he has to play going forward, how dominant he needs to be on both ends. And I think he's taken that to heart. And I think the other aspect that is very important to watch is Giannis. Giannis on a Christmas game. A guy who's averaging 43 points a game against the Sixers. He gets buckets, he dunks, he's angry. He'll have Christmas colorways as well to break out. And I think it's just a great time to see people's shoes, to see people play well on the big stage during the holiday season. So I would definitely say I'm looking forward to those games. The Celtics game's a little early. So it'll be hard for us on the West Coast to see that game, 9 a.m. on Christmas. I'll probably be sleeping, so I'll miss the start of that. But it'll be cool to see Kemba go at it, Kyle Lowry. You got all those different players, Tatum, Brown. I don't know if Van Fleet will be back or not, but there's a lot of talent to be seen. And I think James is a 50-point candidate on Christmas. I think he's a guy who can put up 50 on Christmas, and it'll be, you know, the first time we've probably seen that since, I don't know, the guy from the Knicks back in the day.
Oh, Bernard King?
Bernard King, I think he dropped a 50 ball on Christmas.
I didn't realize it's been that long. That's surprising.
I don't think it's been that long. I'm exaggerating, but I feel like that's the last guy that really did it, like 50 ball. But I'm sure someone probably did it in between.
Well, I think James is going to get, like, I don't even think we've talked about this. I do believe CJ, well, I don't think it'll be on Christmas, but I do believe James is going to break Kobe's record. I think he'll get to 82 at some point. Is that blasphemous?
No, I don't think it's blasphemous at all. I think the biggest thing you have to think about is pace, space, and his ability to knock down threes and get free throws. He had 60 in, what, three quarters already this year?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not out the realm of possibilities for him to score 80-plus points in a game. It's just about the minutes and if the game is close or not. All those things will play a factor.
So you know how, like, as fans, we criticize James, at least some fans do. I appreciate what he does, but I it's hard to watch him sometimes because the way he's able to manipulate the system, he's a genius at it, but it's a very different way to watch basketball. I wonder when you're guarding him or when you're playing the Rockets, because he goes to the line so much and there's all these stoppages and all the little things and little tricks he does, is it harder to get into a rhythm as a player just as it is sometimes as a fan watching him?
I think a lot of people neglect the fact that James is an amazing basketball player. First and foremost, I'll say that. James is an amazing basketball player. I think he has the antics. He generates fouls. He does a lot of stuff that people dislike about the game. But they're still forgetting the fact that he's an amazing basketball player. Regardless of the fouls on three-point shots, how he grabs people as he drives to the basket, and some of the ways in which he generates fouls, he has a unique skill set, an amazing ability to not only score for himself, but make players better around him. I think people are just mad with how he's mastered the game, honestly. And as the saying goes, you know you're doing something right when people find out ways to hate on you. You're talking about a guy who scored 50 points essentially in consecutive games, and it was like, it wasn't even a story. That's how good he is. He scored 50 points twice in a span of 5 days, and people didn't really talk about it. When you get to that point, you know you're elite. You know you're great. So regardless of what people think about him, I know there's a lot of people who are against the way he plays. They say it's bad for the game. He's cheating the game. He's manipulating the referees. The whole point in sport is to figure out ways to master the game, be as successful as possible, not only individually, but collectively as a team. And for him to generate fouls is good for not only himself, but it's good for his team because it makes them essentially impossible to guard once they go off the dribble. So I think the fact that he's been able to master the game is a credit to him. And I think a lot of people are just jealous, honestly. I think the Luka Doncic comparisons, the way Luka draws fouls at times, I think it's similar, not consistent because Luka hasn't been in the league as long. But Luka's great at getting fouled on three-pointers. Luka's great at using his body. He's great at drawing contact. But it's funny how they have similar games in a sense of playing ISO, playing one-on-one. It's flashy. It's fun. They still make their teammates better. But it's the perception of how they're both viewed in the public eye, and that's very interesting to me.
Okay, two big things for me to follow on that. One, when you force a league, specifically one as stubborn as the NBA, when you force a league to change rules or think about circumventing the rules, as James did and has done, as Shaq did, you're great. You know how hard it is for the NBA to admit it needs to make a change. And that's how great you are. Think about Will Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wasn't allowed to dunk in college. Like, that's how dominant these guys are. So that's one. Secondly, the crazy part to me, you mentioned Luka, is he does some things that are identical to James. But because he's from Europe, because he's bigger, because he is maybe the newer flavor of the month, at this point, we're not criticizing him. He gets all the praise. He gets as effusive a praise as anybody I've seen coming into the league, and he's great. But they play very similarly. They both change speeds and do it without being, you know, the craziest athletes and craziest explosiveness. And they're also both great passers. That's the part that kills me when people hammer Harden. It's the fact that they don't realize what a great passer he is. I think he's as good a passer as there is in basketball.
Yeah, I think that gets lost in translation because he scores so well. People forget that he's averaged 7, 8, 9 assists per game throughout a season in which he averaged over 30, and that's really hard to do. his ability to find the weak side, to throw lobs, and to manipulate a defense is unbelievable. He gets double teamed night in and night out. They run traps at him. They run doubles at him. And he still figures out a way to score 40 while making his teammates better. So I think that's an elite skill. And that was one of the most underrated aspects of James's game, was his ability to manipulate a defense, not only for himself, but for others.
And think about how often he's playing two-on-one or three-on-three-on-two basketball. Like, how does he do that? Like, every night, it doesn't matter how you guard him, he's going to find himself in those positions. How much of that is handle? How much of that is feel? Like, I mean, how does he consistently get himself and teammates in the right position to score?
I think it's both feel, experience, understanding of spacing, understanding of his skill set and how he can make people around him better. He's played the game for so long. He's elite, man. He can score, and he shoots so many threes and is so good off the bounce that you have to respect him out to 35 feet. And when you have the defense out to 35 feet and you have shooters all the way around you, PJ Tucker's in the corner, no one's in the paint. Everyone is spread out, and you have shooters to where it takes help longer to get to you. And when they do help, it's clear everyone's in their spots. You know someone's going to be shifting up or shaping down. You know you have a lob threat with Capella at the rim on the roll. And you know you can always score yourself. So he has all those options in mind every time. And it's just about him playing checkers and chess at that point. He knows that if the big steps up at the defensive end, he can throw the lob. If the big doesn't step up, he knows he's either scoring for himself or hitting the rotating guy out the right corner with his left hand. And he's a really good passer with that left hand driving left. He can throw the lob, no look, or he can hit the guy anywhere from the corner all the way up to the wing.
I've seen you make that pass a lot, that left-handed, like, skip. You know, that's got to be one of the hardest passes in basketball.
Yeah, it definitely is a hard pass in basketball. You have to practice it. You have to be a threat to score, but you also have to read the defense. So there's a lot that goes through your mind as you're driving. You're thinking score first, and then you're thinking, if he steps up, do I throw the lob or do I throw the rotation pass? But then the hard part for a lot of righties is driving left and throwing left. Driving left to throw right across your body is tougher because everyone's so athletic, they're moving. The guy you're passing to might be moving left or right out of the corner. So it gets difficult at times, but as the saying goes, you put the reps in, you put the time in, it becomes extremely easy at one point or another.
10,000 hour rule. I mean, Austin Gladwell, does that apply to, once you're in the NBA, in other words? I'm not just saying, because it's not just anybody can apply the 10,000 hour rule and get to the NBA. But once you're in the NBA and you do something for 10,000 hours, are you going to be great at it, or at least really good, or is that not necessarily the case?
If you do something for 10,000 hours, you're for sure going to get good at it at some point. How good is just up to your skill level, but you'll be sufficient enough to be able to make certain plays or passes or shots just based off of confidence alone. When you know you've worked towards something, mentally you feel more comfortable doing it, the muscle memory is there, and you just have confidence. Like, imagine you prepared for a game in terms of working out, you eating right, your conditioning, and you go play a game. Whereas imagine if you go out and party all night, you don't sleep, you're not hydrated, you haven't worked out, and you go play. Your mindset and mentality is going to be different. Your body's going to feel different, which ultimately is going to affect your play. So I think it's a number of things, not just the placebo effect, but actual work that, like, releases a certain factor to the membrane and to your mind, to where you feel more confident about yourself. And your body understands that, look, you've done this before, thousands and thousands of times. So just now, it's just more muscle memory in your body, just kind of reading and reacting to what's happening.
I got to, last week we talked about, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about the sidestep move and how Eric has gotten so proficient at it, and how you'll do it in a game, but not quite as often because you haven't practiced it. You haven't practiced it enough to where you feel like you can do it at any point in the game. What would be the, like, is there a certain amount of reps, makes, et cetera, that you feel like with a new move or new shot or new pass that you can use in a game, that you'll have to have at least some foundation? Like, what would be the foundation then to have it?
I think the foundation is first figuring out, can I get this move off in the game? Is it something that I need to add? Can I be successful doing it? And then the other part is just phase two, get reps. Like before I do a left-hand floater in the game, I do left-hand floaters in practice. I look at all the angles, I figure out what I'm most comfortable doing, and then I translate it. So figuring out how you can get it off, when you should get it off, where you get it off at, and if you're comfortable, and then you just translate that to the game. I think that's what I've historically done. And I think everybody has a different process. But for me, it's like if I want to do a right to left crossover into a left to right crossover. For one, it's a reactive move. So your muscle memory kind of takes over. But for two, if you want your body to get used to like how deep you have to bend the knees, what type of release point you have to hit to make it, you practice that. Maybe it's in slow motion first to fast motion to faster motion so that you can kind of speed up and figure out like cruise control. What's my pace for this?
Interesting. Yeah, I hear that because, I mean, it's not the same or anything like it, but like when I'm writing a story or even doing an interview, there are certain phrases and questions I won't ask unless I've prepped it and really understood the specifics of it beforehand, especially if it's like a live interview, a live tape, you know, where there's no opportunity to make a mistake. So I hear what you're saying. Two things for me are emojis and food. They're really cool. New York Times analysis of LeBron and his Instagram game, specifically his emoji game. And he said, that's all me. It's right from my phone. Nobody has my password. Nobody's making posts for me or talking for me. I speak for myself. He has, he has 1,172 emojis in his feeds and stories. And his go-tos were fire and red hearts. Also had quite a few crowns. And also 54 flexed biceps. TJ, for the sake of argument, what would your emoji stats be? Because I can tell you, I know what your go-tos are in text, but Instagram and like you might have different ones in some of these threads you're on. So what do you like to use?
Man, the crying face, praying hands, the eyes, the shrug. Kissy face. I use the pink hearts, the two pink hearts, one's big one, one small one. The wine emoji, upside down smile, the tea emoji. I use a little bit of the hand gestures, a little bit, like the fist, the A-OK. I'm going to go to our text. Let me go and see what I'll be seeing. I mix it up depending on my mood.
Yeah, because you're missing it. There's a couple that you're missing.
Okay.
There's a couple, praying, not a lot, but there's a couple.
The praying hands and then the praise hands.
Exactly. Yeah, another one that you've done, the eggplant emoji.
The eggplant emoji?
And then like the money one. Whenever if it's like a wager, it's either money or wine. What about who else does some like crazy emojis?
Who uses crazy emojis? I've seen our rookies use hearts, and we were like, bro, why are you posting hearts? And he's like, that's love. And we're like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you, younger generation kids? Posting hearts and stuff in the team chat.
You know what's interesting? Have you? Like when I was growing up, and even now, when a guy's a really good shooter, I'll say, "Oh, that guy's got a great stroke." But some guys have told me, "No, we don't use that word. Like they don't like it. They don't like stroke. They like he's got a great jumper or he's wet, whatever."
Yeah,
stroke is not part of the vocabulary. Have you heard that?
I have. I use jumper or he got a cannon or he's strapped or is wet.
Interesting. A food. What about food? Last order of business, Christmas food.
I'm not sure what I'm going to do on Christmas. I told my family don't worry about coming because we have to fly out on Christmas to go to Utah and play on the 26th. So I'll probably go crash at somebody's house or, I don't know, figure it out, you know, in that manner, in that way. But I love holiday meals. I love the holiday food. I love the options of soul food mixed with traditional holiday food. So definitely some types of a dessert. I definitely want collard greens. I definitely want mac and cheese. Basically a lot of things I eat for Thanksgiving, I want for Christmas all over again because it's an excuse to eat it.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
We have to answer these questions or the fans are going to be very upset. So at canned, C-A-D-N underscore O-E-S-T, they ask about a four-point line. I'm going to answer first. I would not like to see a four-point line in the NBA. For obvious reasons. I think the game, the way it's been played historically, is the three-pointer. And the three-pointer is already a shot that changes the game. A lot of people have adapted towards it. A lot of teams are shooting it now. And I think that's enough and that we don't need a four-point line.
I would be with you there. The only thing I would say with the four-point line is can we maybe test it out like in G League games or summer league, something where we can get a sense of, is there at least some part of the game or is there ever going to be a point for it? Because there are like, you know, arguments to be made about a 4-point line that would say, well, we could spread the floor out even more, especially in the playoffs, which obviously would never happen. But I'm just saying, in theory, it would be cool to test it out, just like we did with the half court, you know, making it from 10 seconds to 8 seconds, and it ended up being a good rule, I think. So I would say no, but I wouldn't just shut it down completely.
I like it. I think trying it in the D League or G League would be cool, but I don't know if we're ready for it. Next question. At IronMike412 asks, CJ, why do you and Eric both wear number 3? Well, Eric wore it first, and before Eric, Allen Iverson wore it, and Allen Iverson was our favorite player, and then D-Wade wore it, and D-Wade was also our favorite player. And when we were younger, it was also one of the smaller jerseys in T-ball and in our basketball leagues, and we were both really small, so I liked the way the 3 looked on my back. I liked it because it was like a statement number. To me, I felt like, you know, sometimes the elite players wear 3 or 1. I wore 7 in baseball because of Ken Griffey. So I've done like different numbers, Kenny Lofton. So I've done different numbers just based on players I've liked. And I've always been a fan of my brother. So I wanted whatever number he wore. And then I wanted it because Allen Iverson, my brother, and D. Wade wore it.
Yeah, I know you said Iverson was the guy that gave you belief. Like he was the one player that you said, well, I'll look at him. He is super small and fearless, so I could be like him.
Yeah, that's definitely it. I think AI, he's the staple, and like you said before, that goes along with the next question. If you could play with one NBA Hall of Famer, it'd be AI or Jordan. I think I'd go AI, Jordan, Magic, one of those guys.
See, I'm a little surprised there's one guy on that list you didn't say, which would be Larry Bird. I was just thinking from a perspective of like having another knockdown guy on the floor with you, and then you could get get more assists, and you'd have probably more open looks.
Right.
You know what I mean? But Bron, I mean, yeah.
Oh, how about Bron's on the list too, for sure.
Because obviously I know how great he is, but how much of that is because of the shots that he can get you, which is, you know, needless to say, great looks every night.
I think Bird could generate great looks. Bron could generate great looks. AI, just because of their offensive magnetic force that's around them. When they're on the court, they have attention of everyone.
Okay, well then what retired big man, like great center, Will, Kareem, Shaq, would you love to have played with? Because think about the pick and roll.
Will, Kareem, Shaq. Probably go Shaq just because he was such a force down there. His automatic double. You had to double team him. So I would go with Shaq.
What about Olajuwon?
I like Olajuwon too, but I think Shaq was just so dominant and forceful, you had to put two people on him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I want to get Shaq on the pod. He told me he'll definitely do it. Great dude. I think he'd be awesome to have on, especially because he's an actor. You're an actor. I think you guys could really vibe there.
I think it would be super dope. Shaq's a funny, funny man.
So I got to get your Christmas wine. Anything of note that you'll be experimenting with? Because I know you recently delved into the cab world, which I was a little saddened by.
I did recently dive into the cab, but I'm never against a good Pinot. So you can always just keep that on the radar. You always keep a good Pinot on the radar, on the radar for me.
As number three always said, cue the wine music, please. I had a Dumol Russian River Pinot, D-U-M-O-L. Fantastic. I think it was like 68 or 70, which is, you know, you're starting to get up in that price range, but still reasonable for the quality of Pinot. I think it's, I don't know if it's top 1% as you love to have, but it's certainly up there. So Dumol, D-U-M-O-L. And I heard you had a good one, CJ.
Yes, as you said before, I've been cheating on Pinot for cab, and I had the Pere de Familia from Columbia Valley. It's a cab, obviously, and it's pretty good. I liked it. It was a 2011. And like you said before, it's in that 70 price point range, depending on where you get it from, which is a little on the high side, depending on what your budget is. But for a 2012, that's rated a 95 out of 100. I didn't mind it at all. It was among the top 1%. More bold than light, more tannic than smooth, more dry than sweet. A little bit of acid, so your mouth is definitely going to water. But it had the earthy taste, a little bit of chocolate, berries, things of that nature. It went really well with my oysters and steak. And it was one of my first blends from Washington. I've never really dipped into the Washington state often or ever. So I would recommend it, and I recommend you having it with pasta, beef, veal, or poultry. So basically, some type of meat.
Well, you know, us Washingtonians can make us some really good grapes. I'm really happy to hear that you've been experimenting with the eastern state of or eastern side of the state. That's where our grapes are grown,
right?
And we don't mess around. Now we're not Willamette Valley or Napa or Sonoma, but Walla Walla, you know, we can do some things, so I'm thrilled to hear it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be a great time. I'm going to have to open up the cellar and get after it. But in the meantime, one more question from at L-O-S-H-I-O-N. Will CJ and Jordan ever run pickup together? I had to finish with this question because why not?
That's not a question, is it?
One day we will play pickup together. It will be hilarious.
CJ, that means a lot to me that our faithful listeners would even consider me in there. I really appreciate that.
One day we will play. We have to. It'll be fun.
Well, the truth of the matter is, for those who care about this sort of thing, CJ has been ducking me for years now.
This guy.
I would love to have a shooting contest. I really would. He knows I can step out and really get it going. I think the fear is real. And I'd be interested to see if we did play pickup, if he would want me on his squad or if he'd want to check me, because there's a lot of issues that could happen there.
I think it just depends on the time, where we're at in our lives, how old we are, all those things will be a factor. But we have to be teammates and play against each other at some point. Well, we want to wish all our listeners out there a happy, happy holiday season and a terrific new year. Continue to watch Blazer games, continue to support the Blazers. All those things are extremely important. Jordan, I hope you enjoy your time in Hawaii. Get some sunlight for me. I'm getting pale. I would love to have some sun. Have some Henny Coladas for me and whatever else they have to offer out there, along with Pinots and Cabs. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/pullupwithCJ, or wherever you get your shows. And don't forget to pull up in 2020.